This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
And welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here this week, and I'm here with Susan. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
How you doing?
Pretty good. Enduring this, massive shitstorm that's breaking all around us.
Shitnado. Yeah. Shit avalanche. Shit everything. Yeah.
Shitnami.
Shitnami. Yeah. You know, I was just thinking, you know, we're not professional journalists. I can't even imagine the exhaustion like reporters and journalists have been going through for the last few years, because it's, by the time you're done, like, actually writing your story, the story might have changed. Everybody's going to need a long vacation after this administration.
I figure, journalists right now just can't plan on date nights, because you know Trump's going to ruin it.
You can't plan anything. Forget a vacation. I don't know. It's because we feel stressed every week. We're just trying to make sure our, you know, 40 to 45th is pretty current. And it kind of never can be, because it takes a day to turn it around anyways. But anyway. All right. So let's start with a little bit of last week, where I think you and Waj talked about Sondland and Taylor and quid pro quos. And let's pick it up from there. What is going on?
Yeah, so last week we talked about how, first of all, the subpoenas that were issued out and how basically no one in the Trump administration was agreeing to abide by the law.
Amazing.
And nothing's changed there. Nothing is actually, as far as I know, there hasn't been any production, which is still a huge problem.
But Susan, why isn't the House issuing some kind of response? Like, why aren't there contempt, why aren't they, whatever it's called, why are they doing something about this? Can't these people be arrested?
Because for reasons I cannot fathom at this point, Pelosi has decided that's not a politically viable strategy. I don't get it. I'm not even going to try and defend it. I really don't get the logic. I don't at all understand. Last week I was going to try and prepare an explanation for, why they weren't doing contempt, especially against Giuliani. He's not even in the administration. And there's nothing to parse in their statements. They're just like, no, we don't think it's worth pushing that so far right now.
Unless she knows something, she's waiting for the right time. Because I cannot imagine a GOP House not doing the same. They would absolutely jump on this.
But the whole point's to get information. You need documents to prove things. Yes, testimony is important, as we'll get to in a second, but having the documents to prove that testimony is crucial. And at this point, it looks like we're going to be left with having some damning testimony that is uncorroborated because we don't have the documents they were supposed to produce and refuse to.
But the Southern District, though, they are operating differently. In that case, if it comes down to it, Giuliani could just, they'll lock him up.
Yeah, well, that's a criminal proceeding. And I mean, I'm still on the fence about Giuliani, what's going to happen to him. He is definitely out of trouble. He's clearly under investigation. He's clearly
facing liability. He hasn't been in the media much. He's been kind of quiet lately, right?
Finally. Last week or so. But at the same time, I cannot imagine Barr's DOJ allowing him to get prosecuted. So we'll see where that ends up going. Right. But yeah, Giuliani has finally learned that he needs to maybe not be talking publicly on every cable show that will let him on. The Carter Page technique worked for Carter Page somehow, but it's not going to work for Giuliani. Mm-hmm. So
I was just missing that little boy for a bit. Anyway.
So Sondland, we talked about last week and how he'd be testifying. I don't really, there's some good reporting on what happened. It's worth checking out. I still feel a bit unclear on what all went down. There were not as many leaks from Congress that I expected about him, neither from GOP or Democrat. There wasn't really any GOP wasn't going, this disproved the entire impeachment narrative or anything. And it wasn't like the Democrats were like, we proved everything. It was kind of a dead ball, which is weird. It shouldn't have been.
Right.
But from what we do know, and what we know from his statement that he gave, the prepared statement at the start of his testimony, I mean, it's all spin, but it doesn't seem to me that it can be truthful. I don't see how in his statement, based on what else we know, everything in there was factually true.
Well, I didn't read the statement, so tell me, what about it do you think he's definitely fudging?
Well, it's hard to say what parts of the fudge. That's the uncertainty there. But his description of events such as he never knew it was contingent on investigating Biden. I mean, sure, he'd heard about Burisma, but he never knew that was tied to Biden, or Trump never tied it to Biden. And yeah, right. he said he told Ambassador Taylor in the Ukraine that there was no quid pro quo, but that was because Trump told him that there was no quid pro quo, and he had no independent knowledge to verify it. So he was walking a middle line of not like doing everything he could to support. He was definitely still in Trump's camp. He still had Trump's back fully.
Well, do you think it's fair though, when you've got the president and commander in chief telling you something, shouldn't you just accept that? I mean, do you have to do an independent investigation? If that's what the president told him, I'd believe it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's fair enough, but like, is that true? Can that be true? Based on what else we know about his involvement in this case and the text that we saw from Volker and some other testimony, that doesn't seem to me feasible that he actually had no further conversations about this, or that literally his only knowledge that the no quid pro quo came from what Trump told him and that he had no independent knowledge to contradict it. However, it seems like as of today, this minute, this moment, things are developing that could directly contradict it, because Bill Taylor, the careerist, as the right wing likes to derisively call him, because now apparently it's a bad thing to be a career civil servant. He is testifying. And the lunch break leaks that we got were kind of surprising, because like, we knew he'd be a big deal. We knew he knew a lot. We knew he was in the thick of it. We knew he was a very involved guy who had a very civil servant stance to it. He's apolitical in that sense. But I was kind of surprised by some of the comments coming out. Did you see these, Rabia?
Yeah, I've just been reading people's reactions to also the reactions of the House committee as he's giving his opening. I haven't seen anything beyond like people's reactions to the opening remarks. So,
well, there were people that during lunch break, there were people in the hallways, obviously talking to reporters. And we had, for instance, Representative Andy Levin, who is a new freshman congressman, said that Taylor's testimony was, quote, my most disturbing day in Congress so far in the 10 months he's been there. And then there was another that was talking about how there were audible sighs and gasps while Taylor's testimony was going on.
Yeah. I mean, he said, this is what happened. He said, this is what he was told directly.
But here's what I'm still confused about. How could this be the quote sea change, as someone called it, that would accelerate the timeline of impeachment? Because I did not expect surprises from this. Maybe there was some stuff that was shocking in there, but I kind of thought it'd be just confirmation of things that were already pretty explicit in the record. But based on the reaction, I can't tell if they're just doing the spin, trying to make sure it's emphasized how damaging this is, or if there's some truly new stuff coming out.
Well, yeah, I mean, given the, and I think you're going to get into it later, given the fact that you've got the Mulvaney basically, but Mulvaney walked it back too, saying that there wasn't quid pro quo when he said there was, but this might be the first time that, you know, they are hearing from an official in the know with firsthand knowledge that absolutely, absolutely was conditioned.
Well, Mulvaney had knowledge too. So,
But Mulvaney mocked it back. He said, that's not what I meant.
So, well, here's what we know, though, is that the GOP definitely did not like whatever it was Bill Taylor was saying, because there's no one from the GOP that's out doing their usual spin like I did with Volker and Sondland, where they're like, oh, this destroyed the impeachment narrative. Apparently, as the GOP quotes that I've seen included one praising how effective the GOP council was. That's not saying it's going well for you. It's just saying you're doing really good to try and undermine it, council. Another that said that, this is Zeldin, said that he questioned whether Democrats who thought Taylor was damning actually sat through other depositions, which I kind of agree with. I'm kind of leaning towards that right now, not having known what was said in there, because how could anything Bill Taylor has said have been this much more dramatic than all the awful stuff we've seen so far?
I mean, I just think probably because he's the first one who's unequivocally saying it, who is confirming that this was a clear quid pro quo, that it was communicated to him by the White House that this condition exists, right, on the security.
But do we know that yet?
No, I'm saying maybe that's why. Like, that's what it seems like.
Here's the maddening part. Right before we came on, I saw they finally released or leaked a really shitty photocopy of Taylor's prepared testimony. And I have it in my hands, literally hot off the printer, and I haven't been able to read it. So... all the answers
should
are
should we
here.
Read it together?
It's 15 pages. Here, oh, I will choose. Okay. I ran a paragraph. There's stars on it. Here's one that's starred. I had been making and continue to make this point to all of my Ukrainian official contacts, but the push to make President Zelensky publicly commit to investigations of Burisma and the alleged interference in the 2016 election showed how the official foreign policy of the United States was undercut by the irregular efforts led by Mr. Giuliani. Okay, that sounds pretty serious. Let's see. Man. Okay, this looks pretty bad.
Looks bad. Are all the gasps and sighs warranted? Does it look like to you?
I'm not saying I'd be gasping and sighing over it, but it has me intrigued. Here, another starred paragraph from whatever congressman linked this. The following day, Ambassador Sondland and I spoke on the phone. He said he'd talked to President Trump, as I had suggested a week earlier, but that President Trump was adamant that President Zelensky himself had to, quote, clear things up and do it in public. President Trump said it was not a quid pro quo. Ambassador Sondland said that he had talked to President Zelensky and Mr. Yermak and told them that, although this was not a quid pro quo, if President Zelensky did not clear things up in public, we would be at a stalemate. I understood stalemate to mean that Ukraine would not receive the much-needed military assistance. Oh my God. So, as long as you say it's not a quid pro quo, it's not a crime. Did you know that, Rabia?
Right. And is what he's asking to be cleared up that the Ukrainian president also say in public that it's not, or what is he asking to clear up?
So what happened is that for many, many months, they had been wanting, the White House, Giuliani, have been wanting Ukraine to do an investigation into Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and Burisma and all that. And this happened even before President Zelensky's election. But after he was elected, they continued their efforts with the new administration. And Zelensky's strategy for handling this and his, you know, fledgling administration and all the stress and chaos of what was happening was basically to just not stonewall, but drag it out. They kept saying, oh, sure, we'll do that. And things would move forward. You know, the aid's still getting paid.
I mean, wait a minute. When was this guy elected? How much time did he even have?
He's April, but he's put into office in May. But he, but for months, for like 4 months there, again and again, you did hear sort of non-committal statements and also them saying outright they would do these things. Like in the phone call with Trump, Zelensky did say, oh, yes, we will put in a prosecutor who will look into these things. So they would privately say all the stuff that Trump and Giuliani wanted to hear, and then they'd never do anything about it. Basically, Zelensky gambled that he could just like keep privately committing, do nothing, and then everything would keep moving. So Trump's idea was to have Zelensky make a statement in a public press conference or a public interview where he would that say, we are going to investigate Burisma. This would commit him, like once he said it out loud and had everyone here and had all the news in America go crazy and the news in Ukraine go crazy, then he'd be stuck with this thing and he could no longer do a strategy of backtracking all the time.
Right. So that was, and then he'd get his funding.
So when they said that when Trump says it a stalemate, if it didn't happen, I mean, that's literally a quid pro quo. So.
Are you still reading?
I'm trying to. I'll stop. I'll it looks intriguingly. Man, I mean, it's good ambassador talk from what I can see so far. It's like he's definitely, you can tell he's a queer guy. He's still trying to, even here, even in his statement, he is trying to press his vision, not his vision, but the traditionally American before Trump vision of Ukraine's strategic importance. So it's not just about what Trump did. It's about why this policy was damaging to the American interest and why we should reestablish our old way of doing things. So, yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, yeah.
That's important. That's been, I think that's
his job. Right. And did he resign his position before testifying?
No.
Because I thought the State Department basically kind of said, nope, nobody can respond to this. Okay.
That's a good point. He may be the first one that's still in office that, I think he's still in office. If I had read this thing, I would know. Anyway, moving on, since I cannot read and talk, although
he might not be in that office much longer. But yeah. Okay. So, Susan, I've got a preteen in my house, and there's only one deodorant that both I and my preteen will use. There's only one, really, that I'll buy for her, and that's Native.
Yeah, we're all on the same team for deodorant, really, because Native is the best.
It is the best.
And coconut and vanilla is the best of all the scents, but...
Okay, fair enough. I love the coconut vanilla, too. But, you know, what I love about this, and this is why I buy it for my preteen, is because Native uses safe, simple ingredients, and they're effective. Look, they've got no aluminum in their deodorants, no parabens, no talc.
And they never test on animals. So, plus, it works. Making the switch to an aluminum-free deodorant does not mean having to sacrifice on product performance. I have no idea what aluminum is doing, even, because this one's better than the ones with aluminum. So whatever it is, it doesn't matter that much.
It's not good for you. I can tell you
that. It is bad for you, so.
Yeah, aluminum is very bad for you. But I'll also tell you this. As somebody who, it's very, very important for me to smell good. People in the podcast world, you know, they say I'm the best smelling person in podcasting. I'm not.
She's not lying, guys. They actually do. They do.
But, you know, it's got to start with the right deodorant. And I in my lifetime have I just go through one and the next until I found the right one, and this is the right one, and I've stuck with Native ever since I found it.
Plus, there's no risk to try. They offer free returns and exchanges in the United States.
So check out how Susan and I and my preteen all smell so great. Just go to nativedeodorant.com and use the promo code 45th during checkout to get 20% off your first purchase. Once again, go to nativedeodorant.com and use the promo code 45th during checkout, and you will get 20% off your first purchase.
So anyway, stuff's going. If I check Twitter right now, I'm sure I'll see more updates amid all the chaos.
You don't touch Twitter. I'll take a look.
I just touched it. Can't stop me.
Okay.
All right, so while I was doing the thing I promised I was not doing, I did see one little paragraph I wanted to read out from Taylor's testimony. Goes back to June when he had a phone call or conversations with Sondland. And on June 27th, Ambassador Sondland told me, Taylor, that during a phone conversation that President Zelensky needed to make clear to President Trump that he, President Zelensky, was not standing in the way of investigations. I sensed something odd when Ambassador Sondland told me on June 28th that he did not wish to include most of the regular interagency participants in a call planned with President Zelensky later that day. Ambassador Sondland, Ambassador Volker, Secretary Perry, and I were on this call, dialing in from different locations. However, Ambassador Sondland said that he wanted to make sure no one was transcribing or monitoring as they added President Zelensky to the call.
Oh, shit.
Also, before President Zelensky joined the call, Ambassador Volker separately told U.S. participants that he... Volker planned to be explicit with President Zelensky in a one-on-one meeting in Toronto. Yeah. About what Zelensky could do to get the White House meeting. Dude, this is bad. Okay, that's a little bit surprising. I did not necessarily expect that because I've not heard that part hinted at before that I can recall. Wow, that 15, is...
15 pages, huh?
Okay. And it's damning of Pompeo, too. So, all right, next
is
week.
He still testifying? Or
yeah, oh yeah, he'll be. Right? He might even get the full Hillary today. 11 hours.
Full Hillary. And I think there's a separate hearing going on, too, on Syria. But anyway, okay.
We will definitely get more into the opening statement next week, because there is so much here that does matter for this entire impeachment narrative.
Yeah. Okay, so are we going to talk a little bit about...
Mulvaney.
Mulvaney, yeah, he's just he will soon be replaced, I believe, by I don't know who, Kellyanne or something.
Yeah, Mulvaney has he's been like hinted at before that he was involved. I mean, the whole drug deal with Sondland thing that was talked about, or that Bolton said he was not part of. He has now officially entered onto the impeachment screen with his fairly disastrous press conference. And this is why. I don't want to say hilarious, but it's fucking hilarious. This entire Mulvaney meltdown happened. Why? Not because of Ukraine. Because Trump wanted to have the G7, which he's going to make the G8 next year, at Doral. And because of that, Mulvaney had to go and give a press conference that then turned into a disaster on the Ukraine front. So...
I mean, it was a disaster on the Doral front, too, by the way.
It was. And we'll get to more on that later. But also, it turns out, in the end, there was not going to be the Doral G7. So it never needed to happen in the first place. Like, the most self-inflicted wound you could possibly imagine.
They're amazing.
That is truly a beautiful piece of political work.
So let's talk about, what did he say? What happened? What did he say about Ukraine? That do we have a clip to hear?
Well, let's hear from Mulvaney's presser a little bit about what he... I mean, he is a long presser. He said a lot of things. But here's kind of... one of the significant sections of it.
Those were the driving factors. Did he also mention to me in the past the corruption related to the DNC server? Absolutely. No question about that. But that's it. And that's why we held up the money. Now, there was a report.
So the demand for an investigation into the Democrats was part of the reason that he ordered to withhold funding to Ukraine.
The look back to what happened in 2016 certainly was part of the thing that he was worried about in corruption with that nation. And that is absolutely appropriate.
Withholding the funding.
Yeah, which ultimately then flowed. By the way, there was a report that we were worried that the money wouldn't, if we didn't pay out the money, it would be illegal. Okay, it would be unlawful. That is one of those things that has that little shred of truth in it that makes it look a lot worse than it really is. We were concerned about over at OMB about an impoundment, and I know I just put half you folks to bed, but there's the Budget Control Act. Budget Control Impoundment Act of 1974 says that if Congress appropriates money, you have to spend it. Okay, at least that's how it's interpreted by some folks. And we knew that that money either had to go out the door by the end of September, or we had to have a really, really good reason not to do it. And that was the legality of the issue.
But to be clear, what you just described is a quid pro quo. It is funding will not flow unless the investigation into the Democratic server happens as well.
We do that all the time with foreign policy. We were holding up money at the same time for the Northern Triangle countries. We were holding up aid at the Northern Triangle countries so that they would change their policies on immigration.
Now,
this is so weird.
It is so weird. As a reminder, the server does not exist. This whole server thing, I still don't. To my knowledge, no one has actually figured out why Trump thinks there's a server in Ukraine. We know that Trump...
I feel like it has something to do with Q.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. It probably does. If it didn't before, yeah. It does now. But CrowdStrike... So Trump knows CrowdStrike and the server are connected. He is still fixated on the idea that the server, the physical computer servers, were never handed over to the FBI because they handed over a mirror, which... That's what you're supposed to do. You don't need the physical server. That's not how this works.
He doesn't know how the internet works.
Yeah, or computers. What I still don't get is why Trump thinks that the actual server, the physical server, ended up in Ukraine somehow. But that aside, it does not exist. It's not part of any true thing that's real or matters or exists in reality. And to hear Mulvaney, his acting chief of staff, treat it as a real thing is kind of discombobulating.
I mean, is he the only one who's done that, though? I have other, like, kind of talking heads brought it up as well. Or people, most of them just kind of ignore that thing? Because I can totally see that. I mean, the kinds of conspiracy folks that he follows on social media, Trump, I can see him all kinds of stupid ideas just forever implanted into his head, and you just can't shake it free.
It may be that, because this is an old belief he's held that I've never seen an origin for. So maybe he saw a dumb tweet one day. And ever
I feel like
since
he's been talking about the server for since years. Like the campaign. Yeah.
Since a little, yeah. So I think that's very possible. There are some like anonymous like egg account on Twitter that said like the server's in Ukraine. Trump's like, oh my gosh, it's in Ukraine. And now he's never been able to back away. Mulvaney, though, is the first serious administration person I've heard who's actually talked about the server like this in a very real, concrete way, not just like we should make sure we know what's going on with the 2016 election. Anyway, what Mulvaney also talks about there with the budget and the money holdup, it's kind of a weird misdirection. And also a reminder that actually acting chief of staff Mulvaney is also like acting OMB director. Or he has another job, and technically, theoretically.
That's
two other jobs. That's right. He's also in head of the other agency that I'm blanking on.
Oh, my God.
Point being.
The whole government. Have we not collapsed completely? You've got four people running the whole government.
Point being, there is some truth to what he's saying about the whole holding up money thing. Because what seems to have happened is the executive branch career people were given these orders. And they're like, that's against the law. Like, as government officials, we have to follow the law. We can't not give money that Congress said to give money. We're not going to do a crime for you. So I think that loggerhead is what caused the money to eventually get paid out anyway, even though there was never that pressure from Zelensky.
So basically, because everybody was like, this is criminal and you can't do it. And so they won and the White House relented. But now they're using that as evidence that it wasn't a quid pro quo anyways.
Mm-hmm. And then we had probably what was the most played quote from the presser.
If you read the news reports and you believe them, what did McKinney say yesterday? Well, McKinney said yesterday that he was really upset with the political influence in foreign policy. That was one of the reasons he was so upset about this. And I have news for everybody. Get over it. There's going to be political influence in foreign policy. I'm talking to Mr. Carl. That is going to happen. Elections have consequences, and foreign policy is going to change from the Obama administration to the Trump administration. And what you're seeing now, I believe, is a group of mostly career bureaucrats who are saying, you know what, I don't like President Trump's politics, so I'm going to participate in this witch hunt that they're undertaking on the Hill. Elections do have consequences, and they should, and your foreign policy is going to change. Obama did it in one way, we're doing it a different way, and there's no problem with that.
Yeah, get over it. We do that all the time.
Wow. Is that the reason he's going to get fired? Is it this clip?
He was already about to get fired, apparently, like before this happened. And the whole impeachment thing delayed his firing.
I wonder who decided for him to... I mean, it had to be Trump who decided that this presser needs to be given. Otherwise, like they don't even give pressers anymore.
I think he did. I kind of wonder if, in fact, that it was planned for him to say this, and then it went so badly, they backtracked. Or Mulvaney just was, you know, freestyling and telling the truth he shouldn't have told. But what Mulvaney was trying to do is to say that it's appropriate to investigate a past election, so the 2016 election, and therefore it's not affecting a next election, which makes no sense. And he's also trying to equate like political influence, political decision making with a political process. He's trying to conflate political needs with policy. So like when a new president comes in, yeah, they get their own policies, they get their own policy approach. And sometimes it's called like, you know, their political position. But that's very different from what he's equating it to, which is a domestic political agenda to get elected. So he's trying to say they're the same thing, so it doesn't matter. Now, even with that spin, of course, it still is deeply problematic. We had the DOJ going like, news to us. We didn't know the money was being held up for an investigation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And really, I mean, he tried to back it up. Like, you can't back that up. It's so ridiculous. He, of course, 5 hours later, he's like, nope, that's not what I meant.
Right. On the Wallace interview?
Yeah. He went on Fox to the only remaining semi-fact journalist there. Semi, because Shep was the only one who gets the title of like real journalist. But Wallace was definitely unimpressed with Mulvaney.
Yeah, he pushed back.
Not only did you say that investigating the Democrats was one of the three conditions, not two, that you had just said that you had talked about, investigating the Democrats was part of the quid pro quo. You also said, if I may, it was part of the Justice Department investigation into the origins of the Russia probe.
Reporters will use their language all the time. So if my language never said quid pro quo, but let's get to the heart of the matter. Go back and look at that list of three things. What was I talking about? Things that it was legitimate for the president to do. Number one, it is legitimate for the president to want to know what's going on with the ongoing investigation into the server. Everybody acknowledges that. At least I think most normal people do. It's completely legitimate to ask about that. Number two, it's legitimate to tie the aid to corruption. It's legitimate to tie the aid to foreign aid from other countries. That's what I was talking about with a three. Can I see how people took that the wrong way? Absolutely. But I never said there was a quid pro quo because there isn't. Again, Chris.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, how do you walk something back when, like, obviously you said the exact thing under repeated, intensive, like, multiple questions from the press corps?
I mean, the way he's spinning it, which is just to say, well, yeah, that was in the larger context of a whole bunch of other things I said. But, you know, I mean, it's just bullshit.
Yeah. And even in this clip, when he's denying, he said it was a quid pro quo based on investigating the 2016 election. He says, well, it'd be totally fine if we did say that. We just didn't.
That's always their next move. I mean, I don't care what it is. It's always like, we didn't do it. Well, maybe we, you know.
It'd be fine if we had done it.
Yeah. Yeah, it just always ends up there.
So, but let's get back to what the press conference was called in the first place for, the G7 at Doral. Now, we knew this was what Trump was been previewing for a while now, that he wanted to have G7 at Doral, but he had not committed to it until Mulvaney went out there and said this.
So how is this not just an enormous conflict of interest for the president to host the G7 at his home resort? And how will the president continue to criticize the Biden family for self-dealing at the same time he's doing this?
Okay, a couple different things. First off, you're not making any profit. I think we've already established that. I think some it's a huge. I've heard that before. I guess I've been the chief now for about 9 or 10 months, and I always hear it whenever we go to Mar-a-Lago. It's a huge branding opportunity. Whenever he plays, at Trump Mar-a-Lago, we play golf at Trump Bedminster. He goes to play golf at Trump up in Sterling, and everybody asks the question, is it not a huge marketing opportunity? I would simply ask you all to consider the possibility that Donald Trump's brand is probably strong enough as it is, and he doesn't need any more help on that. This is not like it's the most recognizable name in the English language and probably around the world right now. So no, that has nothing to do with it. That's why, I was skeptical. I was aware of the political sort of criticism that we'd come under for doing it at Doral. Which is why I was so surprised when the advance team called back and said that this was the perfect physical location to do this. So I get the criticisms. So does he. Face it, he'd be criticized regardless of what he chose to do. But no, there's no issue here on him profiting from this in any way, shape, or form. What's the difference between this and what we're talking about the Bidens? Well, first of all, there's no profit here. Clearly, there's profit to the Bidens. And second of all, I think if there's one difference that you look at between the Trump family and the Biden family, Trump family made their money before they went into politics. That's a big difference. Yes, sir.
I remember Trump floating this back, like, what, 6 months ago? At some point. Like this a month already ago. Floated.
This was like at the G7. The one, yeah.
It feels like years. Oh, you're the last right. G7. It was just the last G7. But it's interesting to me that Mulvaney talks about like this whole process of how they got to this, right? Like it was, you know, we had a list of 10, and then we had our advanced team go out, then we had our special, then we had our commandos go out and, you know, like narrow it down to, and it, at the end, you know, like they draw one on this. But when there was such a, I mean, like that actually did cause some, maybe Doral was like the line that the GOP was like, no, you're not doing this. Cause Trump backtracked on this. And I was shocked because
almost immediately,
he almost never does that almost immediately. And they announced that, okay, no, we're not going to do it there. And he tweets a couple of times about it. One of the things he tweets is Doral in Miami would have been the best place to hold the G7 and free, but too much heat from the do nothing radical left Democrats and their partner, the fake news media. I'm surprised that they allowed me to give up my $400,000 plus presidential salary. We'll find someplace else. Now, before this, he had also tweeted about that he had offered it for free, this and that. Now, he said that even though they also say at the same time that Trump has no business interest in it anymore. He doesn't control it anymore. He doesn't work it. But at the same time, they're saying this is what Trump said, that I made that decision and I was offering this.
Obviously, he can't control it. Everyone knows it and no one cares. They still care about the ultimate. I mean, if the G7 thing had gone forward to Doral, like, you could just hang up the Republic because it had a good run. Because, like, corruption. I mean, this is the ultimate corruption.
Oh, Susan.
No, this
phony
is...
phony emoluments clause.
It's not even emoluments. It is straightforward. The most, our laws, like, corruption laws and the idea of combating corruption, this is the quintessential...
Right.
This is everything. Giving a contract to yourself is the ultimate
corruption. Bid contract. Yeah.
Like people, if you weren't president and you did this and you gave a contract to like your brother or your cousin, you'd go to prison.
Yeah. But that's what he said. That's one of the many things he said at the cabinet meeting yesterday, right? When he was going on and on about they're trying to impeach me for this, that, and the other phony emoluments.
There was an emoluments problem too. That was another issue with it. But the corruption was pure without the emoluments coming into it.
But the thing is, they don't even. I wonder if it was a test. I wonder if they were like, you know what, let's see if we can do this completely wide open, unapologetically, and the GOP just gets in line. Like, let's see what happens. Because like you said, this is so crystal clear crossing the line that it's shocking that it's not something they would try. You know, I mean, and now they're saying we'll find someplace else, meaning what happened to the other 9 places you vetted, right?
They didn't vet. There's no evidence they vetted them.
So now they're saying it's going to be what, Camp David?
Well, that's what, but
maybe.
I mean, I whether it was an intentional strategy or not, that is very much a dictator autocrat move to do a blatant norm violation just to prove that you can. In this case, if that was the conscious or unconscious strategy, it failed because
it failed for the first time.
This corruption was just too bare bones. There's nothing. There's no line past it. If you can give a contract to yourself, there is no line past that in the corruption world. That is it.
Yeah. I wonder what Fox and Friends had to say about that, because I feel like they are really, I mean, every morning, like that's how he starts his morning, with them just filling his head with crazy and adding to the crazy. And I wonder if this was also a point too far. I didn't really follow it, but.
Well, Mulvaney did go on Fox and say, apparently with the White House's blessing, that the Trump thinks about himself as in the hospitality business, like present tense.
Right. Shocking. Yeah.
And Ross is like, oh, he's the goddamn president, only without the goddamn part.
So why do you think was it just the reaction, like the public, like the immediate, was it like they realized they crossed a line? I was wondering if there were people who were like, well, I'm not coming if this is happening. Although I wonder why would any kind of foreign leader care where America decides to hold it.
The G7 would care so much. Like the whole idea, the G7 are the states that share like the power, like the economic powerhouses that share values. Like we are the elite Westphalian order, believe in international rule of law. To have one of your countries do something this blatantly, unapologetically corrupt, you might as well destroy the G7. So the story I want to see is why Doral got canceled. And there's at least three very strong, plausible reasons. And it could have been a combination of all three. One is that the GOP for once did kind of, you know, shuffle its feet and go, I don't know about that. That seems like a really bad idea. Then again, you also had GOP members that were like, it's, what was it? It's like, it's freeing and it's liberty and correct. Like, it's some bullshit quote about how it's so amazing he can just be open about what he's doing. And then you had Marco Rubio, who, of course, was like, selfishly, as a Floridian senator from Florida, I think it's great anytime our community gets that kind of attention. But but them aside, a lot of the GOP was like, oh, that sounds really bad. But it could have been, too, that others in the G7 were like, we're not going to the G7 if you're going to just end the G7 by doing this. Because what's
the
point?
I think we would have heard about that. Maybe we will. Maybe we will. But I feel like we would have heard about it. That would have been kind of public.
Well, that would have been very, 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 that would have been like a high level call probably in the mm-hmm. code word server now with the calls with Russia and Saudi Arabia. But the third reason, and this was kind of mentioned by reporters on Twitter, but no one that I saw wrote an article, is that Doral was a security nightmare and that it wasn't feasible to have the G7 there. Like, you just couldn't actually safely do it at all.
Yeah. And do you think that nightmare, I mean, do you think that was something that the foreign leadership pointed out, G7 pointed out? Because clearly this administration didn't see it.
I mean, like, one, it's corrupt. Two, we don't want to die. So move your freaking thing somewhere else. Yeah.
There's also the bed bugs. Let's not forget those.
And the bed bugs. That was probably what did it. They were like, you know what? We've put up with so much stuff with this guy in office, but we're not getting bed bugs for him. Sorry, America.
Well, Trump walked it back, but he's not happy about it. Again, in his cabinet meeting yesterday, he brought up Obama's Netflix deal. He said George Washington ran. What did George Washington? What did he say about George Washington?
He said George Washington ran his business too. George Washington's business in office was running a slave plantation.
I was gonna say.
Yeah.
So, but he's not happy about losing that money. He's like, I was gonna do it for free anyway. All right. So Doral over. Let's see what else has been going on. Okay. So let's take a look overseas because obviously this is, you know. Turkey, Russia, Syria, the Kurds. Today, Turkey and Russia just announced a 10-point agreement. And very clearly, I mean, we've been, you know, last week, apparently Pence was supposed to go see Erdogan. And Erdogan, before the visit, said that, you know, I'm only going to meet with Trump. Like, they actually said that, like, officially, which is really humiliating. Pence shows up anyways, looks very tense. Basically, there's some kind of ceasefire that they agreed to, which
nothing
didn't happen. It was a fake, right?
Even the terms of it had been followed. Were nothing. It was not a. It was a disgrace. I mean, America's going to get like we're involved in war crimes essentially at this point. Like, we've greenlit what was happening over there. But the deal that was the ceasefire deal was not. America got nothing out of it. Like, zilch. There was nothing. Conceded
to. This administration doesn't want anything out of it. I mean, like, they are just basically abdicating any kind of duty or any responsibility for any of this. And that's exactly what Russia wants. It's what Turkey wants. And the United States has pretty much gotten out of the way. I mean, like, I saw video footage yesterday of troops with, you know, American troops withdrawing and Kurdish citizens flinging rotten tomatoes at them, you know, for leaving them wide open to be killed by Erdogan. But so we've got this today. It was announced that Putin and Erdogan entered into a 10-point meeting. I mean, America's been completely sidelined from this. Another couple of points of the meeting, it's, you know, it says, like, you know, YPG SDF forces withdraw from 32 kilometers deep zone. In other places, it says, you know, these are Kurdish forces. Kurdish forces can withdraw from Manjib and Tel Rifat. And Trump said this the other day. He said, "They're, you know, what are the words he used? Cleaning out. They're cleaning out the Kurds, I mean, who have been holding these lines, you know, on our behalf, at our behest, for a couple of years now."
His rhetoric is so racist around this. I feel like he's not even getting called out enough for it because he keeps saying, oh, it's the natural state to fight. Like, their natural state is fighting like this, or they've been fighting forever. Like, is it like they are naturally, biologically destined to do this? So who are we to interfere?
Yeah. Another point is that Syrian army forces and Russian military police will enter Syrian territory south of the Syrian-Turkish border and make sure the Kurds withdraw from the designated safe zone. But at the same time, Trump tweeted something weird yesterday, and that was about, we have, you know, why aren't people happy about this, blah, blah, blah. We have the oil. Did you see that tweet?
The one that I'm still laughing over, even though it's, I mean, just the Mark Esperanto part alone. That's the one where he said Mark Esperanto.
Yeah, quoted exactly. Him. Yeah, Mark, the Secretary of Defense, whose name is Esper. Yeah. So I was like, what is that about? And then I read something that said that there's a plan to have the Kurds now protect you know, Kurdish forces protect these oil fields that the administration, you know, wants to protect so they can continue producing. I don't understand. I mean, like, there's I have seen no reporting in terms of like any kind of Kurdish official saying that we've agreed to do anything like that. I don't know what I don't understand the story. I don't know where it's come from.
It's because Trump has wanted to seize the oil from every country that America's in since before. Like, go back to episode one of 45.
He's always said that. Yeah. He's always said that. We want the oil. But that's what I'm trying to understand is how – I mean, so Lindsey Graham, who's – to me, I'm just – like, I have whiplash with him on this issue because he's just – he's like, you know, if Turkey does this, we're going to destroy them with sanctions. You know, if they do this with Kurds, and all of a sudden he's 180 degrees on the other side. Well, 2 days ago, Graham said that he believed that the U.S. state – the United States and Kurdish forces could establish a venture to modernize Syrian oil fields with the revenue flowing to the Kurds. What? I mean, at what? Why would the Kurds do any enter into any kind of agreement? Or do you I wonder if they're just floating this so the Kurds don't go running to another, you know, to Russia or to somebody else and say and basically completely, like, we've lost them completely. I wonder if they're just floating this. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand the story.
If I, like, when I saw that, my thought was this is just Lindsey Graham trying to, thinking he can speak Trump's language and pull him back. Because he knows how obsessed Trump is with, like, taking oil from places. So I think it's possible that Graham was outlining the strategic resources and telling Trump, look, if we stay there, we can get all this oil or help someone else get oil. Maybe we'll get a fraction of it or something. And that was his attempt to make to find the one thing that could cause Trump to reverse course on this.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so this is not – this is they're not dangling something for the Kurds. They're dangling something for Trump.
That's what I think.
To try and save the Kurds. That's interesting, and I can totally see that happening. And, you know, Lindsey Graham has been at the forefront of trying to get sanctions passed against Turkey. But then just today, Mitch McConnell put the brakes on any kind of sanction.
Oh, no, I didn't even see this.
Yeah, just today. But the weird thing is McConnell said that his resolution is also backed by Turkey. This is who said McConnell said on the Senate floor Tuesday that he and several Republicans are introducing a resolution that calls on Trump to end the drawdown of U.S. forces and rethink his invitation for Turkey's president to visit the White House. Has nothing to do with sanctions against Turkey, but for some reason McConnell's like, we're putting the brakes on that. He's saying we have to rethink this carefully. He quotes, he says, we have to think extremely carefully before using a tool that could push a NATO ally into the arms of the Russians. Hello, they just entered a 10-point agreement today. I think that ship has sailed.
I mean, so many ships have sailed. It's,
yeah.
I think it's part of because, so one of the parts of the, so we didn't get this last week when they, everything was falling apart, when they had the Pence and Pompeo fly over and talk to Erdogan and make an agreement. I think the terms were all basically in favor of Turkey. And one of the terms was, one, the existing sanctions would be rolled back once Turkey had gotten what it wanted and seized the land in Syria that it wanted. And two, no new sanctions will be imposed. So right. At this point, I guess there's kind of a constitutional issue here, a constitutional not conflict, but separation of powers issue, because the Senate could theoretically pass sanctions on Turkey, but now we have the executive who does have power in foreign affairs who has done this agreement that says we won't do sanctions. So there is some tension on that front. And also McConnell isn't going to have a spine against Trump ever. So.
Mm. Well, the House was supposed to vote on it this week, but because of the passing of Representative Elijah Cummings, apparently that's also been put on hold, and we haven't touched on that, actually. Maybe we should. It was really terrible news to wake up to that Elijah Cummings, right here from Maryland, where I'm from, passed away. He had some – I think he was only 68 years old. He had some health complications in the hospital for that, and he passed away. He will be lying in state in the Capitol. And, you know, Elijah Cummings is somebody that is just – what can you say? A giant, a living
– Yeah, in the Congress.
Exactly. And somebody that Trump attacked viciously and humiliated, you know, constantly saying terrible things about Baltimore, about, you know what I mean? And up until his final hours, apparently he was still signing subpoenas and doing everything he could to help save the Republic. But it was just awful news to wake up to. What's going to happen here in Maryland? I think there's a couple of different options. Either Governor Hogan is going to appoint somebody to serve out the rest of this term, or there might be a special election. I believe those are the two options, but I don't know what's happening yet. I wanted to talk about this because this is getting a lot of play today, and this is just the most recent reaction of many reactions, because he's trying everything, Trump's reactions to the impeachment, which it seems like it's going to happen.
It's definitely happening. That part's kind of foregone at this point.
Yeah.
So the question is what Pelosi's going to decide her strategy is and what can actually feasibly happen given the obstruction from the White House, and given the fact that everything's so chaotic right now, it's hard to, like, any plans for a smooth, quick impeachment just aren't going to work because nothing is smooth or efficient about Trump.
Part of the problem is he keeps, he's like, what can I get impeached on today? It's like, like, slow your roll. Give us a chance to get these articles together.
Like, it's the best impeachment of all time. I got impeached for more things than anyone's ever been impeached for before.
Yeah. Today he called this Trump Hannity kill him. What is that?
So last night, Trump appeared on Hannity. I didn't catch all of it because it was not one of his, like, news-making appearances. It was more just, you know.
Did he call in?
He was in person. Hannity went to the White House. They were sitting in the lawn. And, of course, Hannity keeps trying to redirect Trump to his favorite conspiracy theories while Trump just starts rambling about his conspiracy theories. Anyway, at one point, Trump makes the following comment that, well, listen to it.
For the guns, for whatever, where guns went all over the place and people got killed fast with the furious. Guns, fast and furious. They could have killed him. They could have impeached him for many different things. They didn't impeach him. They never even thought of impeaching him. Here, think of this. I've gone through the impeachment now since the beginning.
Oh, my weird. God.
So that's weird. It was really weird. I mean, I don't even want to know where that came from in a psych. But then today, this morning, he tweets something. That's, if anything, even more psychotic than what he said last night.
This is what he tweets. So someday, if a Democrat becomes president and the Republicans win the House, even by a tiny margin, they can impeach the president without due process. It's like he doesn't understand how any of this works. Or fairness or any legal rights. All Republicans must remember what they are witnessing here, a lynching. But Jesus. We will win. Yeah. Now, this has actually gotten solicited some pretty strong reaction, even from GOP leadership saying, that, you know, this
not
is not
from Graham.
Okay, not from Graham, who said, well, yes, that's a completely appropriate analogy to make. Mind-boggling. But some other folks have spoken out and said that this is just inappropriate to compare. What is a due process, proceeding? Impeachment is – that is the process. That's what he's getting. A centuries-long campaign of just extrajudicially killing Black people, men, women, and children. And it's just, Twitter today has just, it's been hard to be on because, and rightfully so, you know, a lot of Black activists are sharing stories and photographs of what lynching actually looks like, what it actually was, what it actually is. And it's horrifying. And these are stories. And honestly, many of them, some of them, yeah, we've heard Emmett Till. We've heard some of them I've never heard before. They just erased from history. Horrifying stories.
Yeah. I think to the extent that Trump is capable of that kind of strategy, it's intentional. He knows that he's invoking rhetoric.
Do you think so? Does he?
I think at some level, maybe he's just ranting into the, you know, but at some level, I think he does know that there is racial implications, or he has an inkling of the historical, maybe not, but I think that there was some knowledge there.
I mean, you know, when I think about, like, what he said about Obama and the Hannity thing, I'm like, maybe that's a figure of speech. Like, you know, I mean, I might say something like, oh my God, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to, you know, like that kind of thing.
But was he thinking about them was he thinking of them lynching Obama? Because it kind of sounds like it.
Yeah. The other thing about this tweet is, have you seen the actual tweet?
Yeah.
It doesn't, to me, doesn't look like he tweeted it. Because, you know, his tweets just look so, they're just grammatically a mess. They're capitalized all weird. This one isn't. This one has commas in the right places. It seems like it's punctuated correct. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I feel like somebody else tweeted this. It could be what he's thinking or saying, but I feel like he does not know how to use commas like that, girl.
I mean, he can use commas. I mean, commas are not out of his. It's not impossible for him to use a comma correctly.
I mean, he uses a dash correctly. I believe that.
You mean it is an apostrophe. No.
That's a dash.
I'm making fun of him in the hyphen.
Yeah, exactly. Quotes. I mean, like, I don't know, to me, but look, he's
okay, I'm looking at it, and I'm like, that does have a little bit Scavino-ish to it.
Mm, yeah. Which, if that's the case, then I would say that person knows exactly what they're doing. Trump, I might be like, this man does not even, maybe he doesn't even realize the implications of the words he's using. I can't say that for other people on his staff.
Yeah. Scavino, yeah, that could be. Look at us. But, you know, like criminology from like the Cold War era when you're like scrutinizing the leader's inscrutable phrasing to try and determine like their positioning and their role in the administration.
I think what's really happening here is that, they are invoking like these. That's a violent image that they're invoking, and they're doing it to rile up their base. Just yesterday, I saw a clip on Twitter of a woman. I don't know she was somewhere on the Hill, Capitol Hill. I don't know whose office she was in, wearing her MAGA gear and screaming and saying, if they try to impeach him, our president, you know, this is going to be war. And then today I saw another compilation of so many different right wing or conservative talking heads all pieced together talking about how if they try to do this, it's going to be war. If they try to take, you know, like just invoking civil war over and over again, which he has also done himself.
Intentionally. That part I think is fully intentional.
Oh, fully. And I feel like this is like what he's trying to do is rile with this kind of language, rile up his base to show that, look, what they're doing to me is they're trying to destroy me. And so I'm just putting you all on alert to get your guns ready. They got a lot of guns, Susan. I don't know. He's just preparing for the worst. And I think he really hopes that militias will defend him and take out his enemies.
I think it's a warning that if the Republicans start to break, by the way, guess what? You won't just be removing from office, you'll be destroying. I mean, people will die, they'll be violent. So like, do you really want that in your head? So maybe don't impeach me, even if you might be thinking about it.
I mean, right now what we're seeing is it seems like there's some cracks in the Senate, like on the GOP side.
There are some weak, weak, weak signs of cracks that were not there before. That's something, I guess, but it doesn't really mean that much. But it does, I think that the underlying sentiment isn't different. There's been more expressions of it, and there's been kind of a warning from certain senators. Like, if you keep doing this, you know what? I will break at one point.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. I've seen either Trump tweet about it, or it's just about the fact that Pelosi has not brought the impeachment to a vote yet. And why do they keep raising that? And first of all, it's not even necessary to do, right? But that's just part of the process.
Yeah, we talked about this last week. Like, there's no, okay. It's not part of the impeachment at all. Like, there's nothing that requires it. There's nothing. It's just a claim they're making. And if there was a vote, they'd find a new one. It's just going to be constant goalposts moving. And right now, this is one they can invoke, and it sounds superficially plausible, so they can win media narratives through it. But there's nothing underlying it.
Yeah. All right. So one last bit of news before we head out. I saw right before we got on to record that Anonymous has published a book.
Nikki Haley's been busy.
You think it's Nikki?
That's maybe not, but it feels like Nikki.
Feels like Nikki. Well, let's see. It's supposed to come out next month. CNN got a preview of, I think, the cover and some kind of weird, I don't know what else, a cover and some talk media talking points or something about it. But yeah, Anonymous, whoever wrote that letter, what was it, like a year and a half ago now? A year ago? I can't remember now.
Before Nikki Haley left office, just saying.
Before, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Warning about the consequences of Trump's presidency, has now written a book, and I don't know what the scope of it's going to be, but
look, I read Papadopoulos for y'all. I'm probably not reading this for y'all.
Okay, I will check it out. But here's my thing. I mean, like, if it's going to be Anonymous, like, what is the value of it? Like,
there's no value. Really, it's going to be someone who has an agenda.
Yeah,
Nikki Haley.
Yeah. All right. All bets on Nikki Haley. I don't even have a theory, so it is what it is. All right, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in this week, and thanks so much, Susan, for filling us in, and we'll be back in 7 days.
Now I'm going to go read the Bill Taylor testimony.
Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.